Do you find physics embarrassing? Do you fret about their big, their colossal machines and what they cost? Do you really imagine that God plays dice with the universe? I do, sometimes. But then that's my problem. Robin Williams with The Science Show on ABC Radio National and online at abc.net.au/rn. In a minute, Eureka Prizes, bees and your fossil ancestor and how she had dinner. It was a year ago, early September. They launched the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva. A device as big as Canberra. Turned it on, celebrated, and then... clunk. It broke. Physics of the nuclear kind has been on hold ever since. Professor Jeff Taylor at the University of Melbourne says it's been a hassle.
Oh, in many ways it has been. These things have to be expected, but for example, there are PhD students hoping to have received first data before finishing their thesis, so we've had to change the scope of some of their projects, for example, and we've been waiting 20 years for this.
You say it's not surprising that there should have been a bit of a snag, but was it such a crucial snag? Because to us it looked as if there was a bit of a leak and a case of fixing it, and that might take a couple of weeks, not a year.
It was a great euphemism, wasn't it? A helium leak. I think it was 1.5 tons of liquid helium in about half a second, so it was strong enough to lift thousands of kilogram magnets off their anchors and cause quite a deal of damage. The other thing which has taken some time is to put in additional systems to mitigate any possible recurrence of this event.
Where are we now in over mid-year 2009?
So all the magnets that had to be removed to be repaired are back in. There was over 50 magnets, and these things are monstrous high-technology devices. All the reconnection, which involves welding and resoldering and so forth, is back in. The original problem was due to what they call a splice, a copper soldered joint, to take current when there is a quench of the superconducting coil. They have been receiving most of the attention to see where there are additional problems there. In addition to that, there's a quench protection system improved over the previous one, which was supposed to have stopped what happened. That's been completely revamped and rebuilt. And there are additional venting valves to increase the capability of getting anything like this amount of helium out of the system if it does warm up.
How much does all this cost?
I really hesitate to put a figure on it, but it's tens of millions of Swiss francs. And they have a plan now for over the next 5 or 8 years of building up strengths in spares and additional monitoring systems and additional systems to provide for ongoing 10 years of operation, 15 years, 20 years of operation without these sorts of things occurring. So they're putting a huge budget into that as well.
Now, when we talked about this to the director in February, he discussed not a kind of switch on, but a gradual build up over the months, starting perhaps late September, October. 10% capacity. When do you think you might get to the 100%?
Yes, with the machine just being brand new and turning on, of course, there can be a plan of gradual build-up, testing and so forth along the way. There's a lot more pressure now to get to the main game. One of the things that we will have to give up in the first year, probably, is the maximum energy, which requires the current through the magnet to be maximized, and that's where the issues were before. So there'll be some skills developed in understanding potential problems, so the full current won't be achieved in the first year. And that's the biggest thing we'll lose, I think, from any foreseen plan, starting at something like a factor of maybe a half or so of the planned energy. The other thing that Lynn Evans would have been talking about is building up what we call luminosity, how many particles are interacting at one time, the intensity of the beam, if you like. That's much more difficult with a new machine. The operators have to learn the quirks and little idiosyncrasies of the control systems. Getting these beams down to a size which is a fraction of a human hair across, which is one pretty interesting feat, but the second interesting feat is they should be in the same fraction of a human hair, whether it's so that the two beams can be colliding together. That does take some time to become a reliable operation, and it was always foreseen the beam rate, interaction rate, would take some years to get to maximum, but we were hoping to be able to run at full energy from day one.
I wonder how this will affect the kind of profile of it, because I remember when the launch was on, the BBC, Radio 4, had something like Large Hadron Collider all day for 2 days, and you had TV stations around the world. I remember the person who, not just the editor of the Times of London, but the guy who was in charge of many of the News Limited papers, said that there were three big spikes in a year. One was the Mumbai attack, another was the GFC, the financial crisis, and the third was the Large Hadron Collider. So having had that tremendous peak, what happens when you gradually build up? Do you keep it all very quiet?
Well, there'll be another big launch when the first beam circulates and when we get first interactions. In the previous attempt, we didn't get to it to interactions occurring. It'll be very hard and probably not the best thing to try and repeat that meteor onslaught. I suspect the build-up will be more managed, but will be around collisions where we actually can start to see the interactions that the beam was made for.
What about your own work? What are you hoping to do soon?
The big experiments, ATLAS, is the main one that Australia is involved in. Continued preparations. We have been taking cosmic ray data this year. So that's been used by one of our students to help align the detector, get to down to a precision of a few microns. So the cosmic ray data is useful for that. There have been tests along the way of the compute system, which is the worldwide grid that ATLAS and CERN have been developing. This is where hundreds of thousands of computers around the world are harnessed to analyze the data, and that requires data transfers across the globe, which are pretty much unprecedented from one user group. Then in the level of our groups here in Australia, Sydney and Melbourne, looking at simulated data to try and improve the ability to extract this very small signal, this very small number of events from the mass of events that we know about and aren't
sure.
That interesting.
So, well, all those bits of interaction, what are you actually trying to find out yourself, your own team?
We're looking for the Higgs boson directly. Like everybody else, we'll be looking in particular channels where we have expertise, in where the hoped-for Higgs boson will decay into a particular kinds of particles. And in fact, it's the supersymmetry version of the Higgs boson, which decays into particles we call tauons, which our groups are looking at in particular.
Very spiritual. The Tao of physics, yes.
That's right.
And the interesting thing is that what you see is not necessarily the boson nor the taos, but the signs that they were there fleetingly.
Exactly. That's always a little bit difficult to understand, but these particles don't live very long, so you can't hold them and look at them and put them under a microscope. You watch what they decay into, the way they disintegrate. And the great ability of these detectors is to look at those particles, the daughter particles, the decay products, with very high precision so that we can reconstruct with great accuracy where they come from. And that's how we detect these particles.
With so many people after the Higgs, are you all trying different approaches?
Exactly. In fact, there are many different ways that the Higgs particle will disintegrate. And they'll all have different signatures, so we'll have the ability to detect them in a different way. And they'll all have different daughter particles. So that way we can actually be more sure of the results we come out with. So there's hundreds of different ways of looking for it.
So it's also been called the God particle. Can you imagine the headlines when you say, got it?
Only just. I mean, the God particle, it's Leon Lederman, who's a
Nobel Prize winner.
Yes, and a great guy, very funny fellow. I'm sure he'll be pleased. It'll be a wonderful day. I hope we're not publishing our results just through the New York Times, as the Americans have been doing over the last few years, but that it will be a proper scientific vetting of the data, which I'm sure it will be. It'll be fantastic.
But the paradox is that here you are announcing one of the most important discoveries in the history of science, and most people reading the paper won't understand what you've got. Can you give me one sentence about how you'd announce it?
Particle physics really now is, although we're trying to study the basic structure of matter, what we're made of at the finest scales, it has a direct impact on our understanding of the very first fraction of a second after the Big Bang. So to understand how matter evolved from that very early phase requires us to reproduce some of these interactions in the lab. This discovery, and it may not be the Higgs boson, it may be something else, it may be that we live in higher extra dimensions, there may be a whole range of possibilities. Whatever this discovery will be, and we know that we have to find something, whatever the discovery will be, we'll be able to say with great certainty what happens, where we came from at that very, very earliest of epochs that we can get to at this stage. And I think understanding the development of the universe from that earliest of epochs is incredibly exciting.
So stand by for action from Geneva and the Large Hadron Collider, up and running slowly quite soon. Jeff Taylor is Professor of Physics at the University of Melbourne.